Yesterday we learned that Moshe Rabbeinu was extremely distressed, and he actually asked Hashem to punish the sinners. So God responded. God appears before Moshe and Aaron and speaks to them. Let's we'll start with the beginning of the third reading today, chapter 16, verse 20. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe ve'al Aaron lemer. God speaks to Moshe and Aaron. And he says to them, "Hibadlu mitoicha eda, separate yourself immediately from this congregation. Hazois, this congregation, va'achale isam kiroga, I will destroy them momentarily." Okay, who should separate from where, and who is going to be destroyed? The Ibn Ezra says that hibadlu, since verse 20. Is addressed to Moshe and Aaron, by Dabar Hashem al Moshe ve'al Aaron. So therefore, Hibadlu is referring to Moshe and Aaron. So Moshe and Aaron are being told, separate yourselves from the rest of the congregation. The Sepharno says, as long as Moshe ve'Aaron are together with the Jewish people, they bring merit to the Jewish people, because Moshe ve'Aaron. So therefore, Hashem says, separate yourself from the people, so that the people will no longer be protected by your merit. Rabbeinu Chananel was really almost like one of the Gaonim, very early Rishon, is quoted by the Ramban as saying as follows. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, separate yourself from Adat Korach. So Hibadlu is Moshe v'Aaron, but it means HaEda HaZois is this congregation, is the Eda of Korach. However, Moshe Rabbeinu thought, God said, separate yourself from the entire nation. And that's why he follows with a plea for the nation. So Moshe asked that the sinners be punished, and now he hears everybody's going to be punished. And Ramban explains this is because Korach utilized some very cynical measures to be able to get through to everybody. He told the entire nation that things would be much better for them if they wouldn't have to answer to Moshe. They could get better leadership, he said. You could get better representation. We can get a better deal. And if only we can kind of shift things around, if we can have a bit of a revolution, you'll all be happier when this is over. And as such, because the people became swept up in this, as is the human nature, the mob mentality, people get excited, people get swept up. So because that became the case, in fact, they were guilty of sedition against Moshe v'Aaron. They were culpable of violating the words of a Navi and as such deserving of punishment. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, there is an element of truth where God says separate from Korach, but there's an element of truth to everybody now deserving punishment, even though Korach is the rabble-rouser and the original instigator. The Or HaChaim says that Hibadlu refers not only to Moshe and to Aaron, but in fact, it refers to all of the tzaddikim. Tzaddikim, righteous people like Yehoshua, Kalev, who had always been loyal to Moshe Rabbeinu. And these people should separate themselves from the rest of the congregation. And the Or HaChaim adds something incredible. Truth be told, as Ramban says, all of the Jewish people were guilty of a cardinal sin. They had violated basic principles. They had deviated from Moshe Rabbeinu. They were in a state of rebellion. As such, they were not deserving to live. However, Hashem wants Moshe to daven for the Jewish people. And Moshe Rabbeinu is very distressed. Moshe Rabbeinu is feeling very, very angry. So because Moshe Rabbeinu is feeling very angry, and because he's very distressed, he's not going to daven on behalf of the Jewish people now. In fact, who did he daven on behalf of? He davened on behalf of them in the opposite way yesterday. Yesterday we learned that he said Hashem should punish the sinners. So the Or HaChaim says God wanted Moshe to daven for the Jewish people. And you know what happens when something like extraordinary circumstances present themselves? It kind of reorients us. Sometimes people are angry, frustrated, and then something extraordinary happens. And after something extraordinary happens, all of a sudden, we kind of get back to ourselves. and we go away from whatever we strayed. So Moshe is in this deep state of distress when Hashem says to him, separate yourself from the people. And Moshe Rabbeinu was one with his nation, always together with the people. Hashem says, separate from your people. This caused almost, if you will, a wake-up call within Moshe. And Moshe Rabbeinu realized he's being distanced from the nation. So this would awaken within him a sense of compassion, a mercy, and he would daven for the Jewish people. So this is how we understand, some of the ways we understand, verse 21, he badlu. And it works. Moshe Rabbeinu does daven. And he does beseech heaven on behalf of the sinners. Vayiplu al pneihem, Moshe v'Aaron, fall on their faces. I would presume it's even literal, but it's certainly euphemistic. Vayemru keil elekei haruchis. The God who is the God of spirits. L'chol basa, for all flesh. Ha'ish echad yecheta, v'al kol ha'eda tiktzeif. One man sins, and everybody bears the brunt. God's anger is directed against an entire nation because one man sins? Like, really, could this be right? So what happened here? Here we have some Rashi. What was Moshe Rabbeinu davening for when he said, Keil elekei haruchis, the God who is the God of all spirits. So like, as Rashbam puts it, you know everybody's innermost spirit. You know what's really going on in everybody's heart. You know who sinned and who didn't sin. And Rashbam, of course, is just simply going further from what Rashi says, developing Rashi's words. A person, every one of us has consciousness, we have thought. Every one of us has desires. Every one of us has a personality. All of those things are under the rubric of Ruach Ha'adam. They're all part of our human spirit. Part of the spirit. That's not a, it's not a fleshy thing. It's not a tangible thing. It's not a technical part of us. It's the non-tangible. It's the non-flesh, the non-corporeal part of a human being. And so, what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying is, Yedeya Machashavis. Here we refer specifically not to people's desires, not to people's souls. Here we're referring specifically to Machshava, to thought. So Elekei Haruchis, the God of spirits, refers to the element of spirit, which is encapsulated with the idea of consciousness, a thought. Yedeya Machshavis, Moshe Rabbeinu says, you know thoughts. Ein midascha kemidas basar v'dam. Your measure is not the measure of a king of flesh and blood. Melech basar v'dam. What is the measure of a king of flesh and blood, a mortal king? So sarcha alav miktsas medina. Some of the kingdom rebels against him. Eini yedeya miachaita. He doesn't know who is loyal, who rebelled. Lefichach, therefore, kishu koyas. When his anger flares, hu nifra mikulam. He exacts payment and retribution from everybody en masse. Aval ato, but you, says Moshe Rabbeinu, lefanecha geluyois, kol amachashoveis. You know what's going on. You know what people were really thinking. V'yedeya ato mihachaita. You know who's really the sinner. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu says it would not be appropriate for God to strike down a whole nation because there is sinfulness amongst them, but rather to do a pinpoint surgical strike. Those who deserve should be stricken. Those who don't deserve it, those who are not the sinners, they should be left alone. As Moshe Rabbeinu goes on to say, Ha'ish echad, hu achayte, he is the sinner. Va'ata akola eida tiktzif. So what prompted this? When Hashem said to Moshe, he bodlu, separate yourself, mitecha eida, separate yourself from the entire congregation. Which could have been meant for the congregation of Korach and his mutiny. Or it could have been even from the entirety of the nation. Because as we learned, many of the people got swept up. That's what Ramban says, they got swept up in this. So people got swept up in this mutinous fever, and everybody was in a rebellious state of mind. You know, they were angry. They wanted to go to Israel. They're not going to Israel. Now they're going to be in the desert. They're going to die after 40 years. Nothing worked out for them. All their dreams had crashed. There's nothing left for their dreams. When people have dreams that are broken, what do? They look for a scapegoat. They're angry. They're frustrated. It was a ripe, fertile ground for revolution. It was the perfect time for Korach to seed this kind of mutiny. And it flowered. It succeeded. It blossomed. I hate to use positive words, but that's what happened. Maybe it grew like weeds, but it grew very quickly. So now God, Moshe Rabbeinu sees God is angry at everybody. So he says, "Ha ish echad hu achayta." He's the sinner. Va'ata al kol ha'eda tiktzef. You'd be angry at everybody. I mean, really, Korach. Korach is the man. He's the one who kicked up this storm. He's the one who planted these seeds of sedition. He's the one who grew the weed garden. It's not everybody else. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God says to Moshe, Yofa Amarta. Well said, Moshe V'Aaron. Yofa Amartam. Ani Yedeya. I know exactly who sins and who doesn't. Moidia Michato Milachata. Not only do I know who sins and who doesn't sin, I will make it known. I will broadcast who did and who didn't sin. And you have nothing to worry about. I'm not going to destroy everybody. Who will be destroyed? Those who bring the Ketorot are going to be destroyed. And of course, Korach Va'adato, Korach and his inner circle, they will be swallowed alive, as we will see. So this is how Moshe Rabbeinu hears the anger of Hashem after his prayers yesterday, which were answered perhaps a lot more quickly than he hoped for, a lot more intensely. Hashem said, like, he buddled. That's it. Moshe said, whoa, one second. I didn't mean he buddled. I didn't mean everybody. I just meant the sinner. Please don't strike everybody down. I know they're kind of guilty, but still, they just got swept up in this fervor.
What's Datan and Aviram's beef? Are they also Levim, or are they just troublemakers?
Datan and Aviram were Reubenites. So first of all, they have a beef with Moshe going back 80 years. Or not 70 years. Okay. When Moshe Rabbeinu grew up, whether that's 10 or 12 or 15 in Bar Mitzvah, whatever it was, and he went out to see how the Jewish people are doing.
Those are the ones.
They were the ones who Moshe Rabbeinu criticized. They were the ones who were Malshin. They brought the news to the Pharaoh, and the Pharaoh decided to kill Moshe. Right? So they're angry at him since then. So this is a very, very old beef. But the Kliyakar explains that the Reubenites were fertile soil for rebellion because they were still smarting over their loss of the Bechora, the firstborn. Even though Jacob took away that firstborn right, not Moses. But nonetheless, they felt that now was time to maybe settle some old scores. So they had this old lingering grudge, this old lingering frustration. And when people have lingering frustrations, it's always easy to enrage it, you know? It doesn't take much to create a rebellion, a revolution. Everybody always loves to throw away status quo without realizing that things end up a lot worse later on. There's nothing shocking here. It's not as unpredictable as we might think it to be. It's extremely predictable what happened over here. People were supposed to go to Israel. They didn't go. They're going to blame themselves. You know, it's interesting. There's a teaching from the Baal Shem Tov that the next morning they said, Hinnu v'alinu. You don't let us go? What do you mean you don't let us go? We're going to go. Moshe said, no. It doesn't work like that. Yesterday you could have gone. Now you can't go. They said, no. Al ki amru ki chatanu. Because you said we sinned. So the famous question is, they did tshuva. Doesn't tshuva always help? So the Baal Shem Tov says, read the words carefully. It says, Al ki amru ki chatanu. Because you said we sinned. You said we sinned. We didn't really sin. So the real mark of distinction between an extraordinary person and a person who's very ordinary is the person who has the gumption and the courage to stand up and take responsibility for his or her misdeeds. To get up publicly and say, I dropped the ball. I ruined it. I'm wrong. I'm guilty. How many people do that? So the masses don't do that. The masses say, we're guilty. He's guilty. It's easy. Blame everything on Moses. You understand? So this is the background against which all this unfolds. And because this is the background against which all this unfolds, it was almost easy for this to happen. It was like dropping a match in a tinderbox. All of a sudden the explosion started. All of a sudden the old grudges came back to haunt the people and like a fire began to spread. So Moshe Rabbeinu realizes this is out of control, which was his fear initially. That was why he tried so hard to tamp this down in the beginning. And now it started to really burn out of control. So he davens to Hashem. He said, don't punish the whole congregation. Don't strike down the whole nation. It's not really the whole nation. It's the arsonist. It's the one who started this machlokes. He should be punished, not everybody else.
So Moshe doesn't daven for Korach at all?
Moshe does not daven for Korach.
That's true.
They do not daven for Korach. We can explain that very simply. If you remember, we learned last week, how come all of the people were forgiven, per se? Not fully forgiven, but kind of forgiven. Hashem stayed the execution, if you will, allowed them to live 40 years. But the Meraglim died right away. How come? Because once they separated themselves from Moshe, they couldn't benefit from Moshe's prayers. They were mafrid, they separated themselves. You have to be mekusher, you have to be bound, you have to be connected to the Rebbe. You can't violate everything the Rebbe believes in, everything the Rebbe stands for, and then expect his prayers to work for you. Moshe, Korach took himself away. It wasn't possible for Moshe to daven for him anymore. Okay, so now let's take a look at a deeper explanation of this. And really the obvious question is, isn't this what they call in English a no-brainer? What if Moshe wouldn't have davened? What if Moshe wouldn't say, oh God, you should be fair? Would God not be fair? What if Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't say, you know, a king of flesh and blood, he doesn't know, so he just does this mass punishment. But you know, so God, you know, if you know, you should do different. Is that not an obvious thing? Like, how do we understand this medrash that Rashi quotes? So this is really the question that the Rebbe deals with. Page Reish Ayin Gimel in the Biurim book. Simen Yud Gimel, bottom of the page. Bahashkafa Rishayna, at first glance, Nida, it appears that the intention of Rashi in his words is to state that a king, a mortal king of flesh and blood, even if he's a good person, he punishes Miktsas Hamadina Shalei Sarcha. Some people who didn't sin end up bearing the brunt. Invariably, that's going to happen. But why is that? Because the king is a bad person? Because he's evil? Because he wants to hurt and harm his citizenry? Because they have no choice. He doesn't know who sinned. He works with the facts as they are available to him. And mi'acha she'em bi'echolti ladas mi'choto u'miloi. Who is a real sinner and who just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time? So therefore, you do what you can to quell the situation. Think of it this way. You ever see one of these demonstrations that goes out of control and the riot police come in? Mm-hmm. Ever see like on CNN or whatever, Fox News or something?
G20.
We had it in Toronto. So what happened? I mean, usually the police come in very, very forcefully, sometimes even viciously, right? In Toronto, it was a whole thing. Bill Blair got sacked because of that, right? Too. There's no question, and I'm usually on the police side. There's no question that sometimes the police will be guilty of some kind of brutality. There's no question. I mean, it's not possible that the police should be in a situation where there's no brutality. Do you know who these people were? You know, these were not organic demonstrations. These people came with broken bottles. These people came with stones. Some of them had Molotov cocktails. There's a lot of bad, very bad people there. And they came with a mind to disrupt, even if it means causing harm, even if it means like doing some very bad things. And the police officer has to react in a split second. And he has bottles being thrown at him. He has rocks being thrown at him. Somebody could have a knife. It's a very, very intense situation. You don't know with certainty. You don't know what's about to happen to you. And because you know what's about to happen to you, and your life is at stake, and your own welfare is at stake, you may well lash out. You're always going to have somebody who's got a video of the police officer who's behaving in a way which seems excessive force. But in fairness to the police officer, and very rarely does society extend a little bit of like kindness and compassion and judgment, stay the judgment of the police officer, think about what he's under. Think about the intense pressure that he's under. He's got to react somehow. Now, what happens is riot police come in to arrest like people. Some of the people that get arrested probably didn't deserve to be arrested. They probably were just like, you know, the difference in a shlomazel and a shlomil, right? Shlomazel means a person shalom mazal. He has no mazal. He has no luck. The shlomil is just like, you know, isn't do. So the shlomil spills the soup. The shlomazel got the soup spilled in his lap. Like the guy's a shlomazel. He came there for a little action, he came there for a little fun, and next thing he knows, he's arrested. He's like, hey, I didn't do anything. Well, this was not exactly a good place to hang out, you know. He was just there, and everybody was screaming and yelling, and he got excited, so he screamed and yelled too. And they were throwing things, so he said, okay, I'll throw one of those too. But he wasn't really this premeditated criminal. He was like, you know, he got caught up in the mess, got caught up in the excitement of the moment. But the police officer whose life is at stake, or who has to protect world leaders. He doesn't have a choice. How's he supposed to x-ray everybody's brain and figure out which guy was planning this for the last 6 months and who walked, jumped out of an Uber 2 minutes ago and just happened to get, he saw some action, so he ran over, and the next thing he knew is people said, come, we're fighting for the homeless. Oh yeah, I want to fight for the homeless. And the next thing he knows is the middle of this vortex. What I'm sharing with you is entirely believable. It's conceivable. In fact, that's what happens. And it's not that the police exhibited such brutality. They had no choice. They were doing what they could with the circumstances. You could like and not like what I'm saying, but this is the metaphor here, basically. So you have this king, and the king does what he has to do, and he knows who did sin and who didn't sin. In the fog of the moment, in the fog or intensity of war, of demonstration, of unrest, of disturbance of peace, things happen. This is not a different kind of situation. That's exactly what's going on over here. There is a mob mentality. Everybody now is getting involved. It's like infectious, an infectious disease. Everybody is, oh yeah, right, Moses. Yeah, he's the guy that let's go to Israel. Oh yeah. We should go to this demonstration. Next thing you know, there's thousands of people. They're all yelling and screaming, down with Moses, up with Korach. Like, where does this go from here? But here's the problem. It's a very believable scenario. But ha'umnam, number one, is there a need for Moshe Rabbeinu to make this comparison? God, there's, you know, king of flesh and blood, and then there's a king of, there's the divine king. God knows everything, and the king doesn't know. The regular law enforcement has to do what it has to do because of its lack of knowledge, because even it's impossible for it to ever know. It's not, how would you be able to figure this out? Is that not self-understood? It's not self-understood that God is omnipotent, who does not have the limitations of mortal human beings, would do whatever it takes and be fair? Did Moshe have to say that? Did Moshe have to beseech, beg, or cajole? It's like a given. Of course God's going to be fair. How could God not be fair? Number one. Number two, you say to him, is it? Even a melech basar v'dam, even the king of flesh and blood, if he's only an Adam Yashar, if he's only a decent person, he certainly would not punish the individuals who are actually blameless or guiltless and they just happen to get swept up in the last moment. And that's what happens afterwards. Take all these guys, they round them up, they take them to the central booking, and they throw them in prison overnight, and then they release them on bail and they get a good lawyer. And some of them actually are innocent. And the lawyer says, he brings clear evidence, my client is an upstanding citizen, he does good things, he didn't mean this, he got caught up, and then the court said, okay, fine. And they eventually look for the rabble-rousers who got this whole unrest started, who is the one who ignited the tinderbox, and that's the ones they're going to punish. So even the king or even the law enforcement that runs out there and is arresting everybody indiscriminately because it has no choice, because as world leaders visiting Toronto, what are you going to do? have the whole world talk about Toronto as a crazy city where people are being maimed in the streets? What do you want from the police? The police were given strict instructions. Make this work. So they're making it work. And then there's a court system, the justice system. And the justice is supposed to be fair. And there are people who didn't deserve it. They're not going to get punished. That's the way it always is. What was this prayer about? So God doesn't have those limitations. There is no fog of uncertainty for God. He knows exactly who sinned, exactly who didn't sin. God is God. Okay. So if Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have davened, would God then have indiscriminately struck down sinners and non-sinners alike? Like, really?
This is in the aftermath of Shlach. I mean, you know,
it is in the aftermath. Yeah. So
when Hashem wanted to wipe out the Jewish nation right then and there, also now.
Yeah, but we learned
everything else. Now again,
we learned about that in our previous lessons, and we took this idea that God said to Moshe, you know, it's in their best interest at this point.
Right. So, you know,
what was Moshe's defense? It's a chilul Hashem. It's a desecration of God's name. What will all the nations say? Okay, fine. I get the argument. You know,
right.
Here, what's the argument? Why would Moshe have to say this? So the Rebbe says that if you look carefully at the words, the answer is staring you in the face. Hatshuva l'kachnu utza b'diuk l'shen nesh Rashi. You want the answer to this seeming conundrum? Look exactly at the precise words of Rashi, because we know that Rashi chose his words with incredible precision. Rashi says, Melech basar adam shesarcha alav. The word sarach comes like for who stained, like something that was clean and became dirty. Miktsas medina, eini yedea miachaita. There's two different verbs that are being employed here. Verb one is sarcha, besmirched, became filthy. And then miachaita is the sinner. I understand that sin besmirches. But why does Rashi use two different verbs here? He says, Melech Basav Dam Shasarcha, and then any day, doesn't know Mi Achaita. Rashi says they are not the same verb. These are not two words that are used for the same action. They are not shavim b'mashmusam. Choyte, a sinner, is idea of guilt. To Adam shechata klapei amelach chet shel mamash. He actually did something wrong. He umarot bei. He actually rebelled against the king. Sarcha is not an actual rebellion. Sarcha means that the people behaved inappropriately. They violated the dignity of the king. That means sarcha olav. It's not an actual rebellion. It's not actual sedition where they actually violated the law. They behaved in a manner which was wild, unlawful, disrespectful.
Korach was permitted. It was already cut through.
Korach was a full blown rebellion for Korach.
He was smart.
He was cynical and smart, if you will, and he abused everybody and got everybody to into the rebellion mode. But who really rebelled against Moshe?
Korach.
But what about the rest of the people? Were they all actually rebellious? They were caught up in the moment. They behaved inappropriately. But you cannot say that they were seeking actual rebellion. They weren't really seeking to replace Moshe. It's a big difference. They tell a story that one time there was a rabbi who had to do something because he had to do it, and sometimes rabbis got to do the right thing even when it's not popular. And there was a particular woman who was extremely angry with the rabbi's affirmative actions, and she began to scream and curse him with all kinds of horrible titles and all kinds of words. And his wife was aghast, and the rabbi said to his wife, "Trust me, she doesn't mean a word she's saying." She says, "How do you know?" She says, "Look at this." He turns around, he says to her, "I curse you, your son should be exactly like me." She raises her eyes and says, "Oi, please God, understand? He's busy cursing the rabbi. Why do you want your son to be like him?" We hate Moshe, we hate Moshe. You should have a son like Moshe. Oi, halavai, we should have a son like Moshe. It's not exactly a full rebellion, is it? So, medubar eifa b'mikra shel adam echad. There's one real chayta. There's one real sinner. There's one person who incited and ignited all of this rebellion against for the other people. And the king doesn't know who is the rabble-rouser, who is the one who incited the rebellion, and who got swept up. How could he know? How could he know? So what does he do? That's it. Punish indiscriminately. Mikol elu shesarcho. Anybody who was there, anybody who was participating, that's it. The court says, simple thing. Were you there? Yes. Did you participate? Yes. Did you sign this? Did you agree with it? Yes. That's it. You're gone.
The right person.
But was he really the person? So earlier on the pasuk it said Vayikohel aleihem Korach al kol ha'eda. It said Korach went and congregated everybody. He was the big unifier to the divisive purposes. Rashi explains Halach etz lashvata v'pitaisim. He went to the different tribes. And he sweet-talked them, he coaxed them. And until he managed to talk them all into this. In other words, who was the real sinner? Who was the central actor in this theater? It's all Korach. However, everybody got swept up in it. And this is also very clearly spelled out later on in Rashi's words when he explains the idea of Dasan Avidim. And Anoshim ibn Esau, Hamishim u'Masoyim, he says the leaders of this rebellion, Datan Avidim, and 250 wise people, they also got kind of swept along, even though they were leaders in this movement, they were leaders in this rebellion, but they also got swept along from Korach. It's all called, we say, nishtatfu im Korach b'machla kosei. The terminology used is they participated with Korach in his rebellion. Whose rebellion was this? It's Korach's rebellion. It's not everybody else's rebellion. This was really not a people's rebellion. It was really Korach's rebellion. And this is Moshe Rabbeinu's taina. Moshe Rabbeinu says, a melech basav adam, a king of flesh and blood, he sees a mass of humanity. He sees people who are coming together and rebelling. He punishes them. But Hashem says to my God, you know what's really going on in the deepest depths of the heart. You know who's really rebellious and who's only superficially rebellious. You know who really meant this and the ones who didn't really mean it. So punish the ones who really made this happen, not the ones who are Johnny-come-lates and participated later on. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers, Yofa Amarta, Gwel said, Ani Edea, I know exactly who sinned, Umaydiya, I will also let everybody else know who sinned. You're right, he says. Atzadikitcha. Ein lahanishala hachaita. It's only the sinner that has to be punished. However, hanachoscha shakirach bavadu hachaita. Your assumption that it's just one man, it's one bad apple, and everybody's really good, ein inachaina. That's a little too optimistic. Shekein ani edeya. I know that dasan and avirim are sinners on their own. They don't need kirach to be sinners. And therefore, they too are going to be punished. Not everybody, but they too will be punished. And the Rebbe concludes with an unbelievable lesson for every one of us. Dasan and Aviram, we learned yesterday, when Moshe Rabbeinu made an overture, try to reach out to them. He tried to say, let's talk. I'll buy you a coffee. What did they say? No. See, gouge our eyes out. We're not coming to you. They responded with such chutzpah, with such insolence, that it distressed Moshe. Right? And a moment later, what's Moshe Rabbeinu doing? He's praying for them. He's saying, God, they didn't really mean it. They're really not such bad people. Kodesh is the bad guy. The rest of them aren't so bad. And from this we learn, if Moshe Rabbeinu behaved like that, we all have a little Moshe inside us. If he could behave like that, we should behave like that. When people do bad things to you, don't rail against everybody. Ultimately, maybe there's one bad person, but if it's possible to judge somebody positively, it's possible to see him in a good light, learn from Moshe and do the same.